is Class 1 of the Queen Kunti Seminar, given by His Holiness Srila Satsarupa Das Goswami on January 6, 1994, at the Gitanagari Institute.
Namasye pudusam tvajam ishvaram prakate param alaksham sababhutanam antar bahi avastitam. Srimanti Kunti Devi said, O Krishna, I offer my obeisances unto you, because you are the original personality and are unaffected by the qualities of the material world. You are existing both within and without everything, yet you are invisible to all. Very briefly, the scene is in Hastinapur, and Lord Krishna has finished his pastimes of Kurukshetra war and saving Maharaj Parikshit in the womb of Uttara. He has protected the Pandavas and Queen Kunti, their mother, from so many difficulties. And now he's leaving them to go back to Dwarka. So as he was about to leave, getting on his chariot, Queen Kunti, who is his aunt by relationship, she is the sister of Vasudev, she came to pray to Krishna. So that's the setting. The setting, and that's the relationship. She's the aunt of Krishna by relation, but she has realization that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So these verses are very authoritative for learning the science of God, especially this verse. This first class I called Approaching Krishna. And this verse, she describes, although he's the nephew and he touches Queen Kunti's feet when she approaches him, she realizes he's not just my nephew. He's the Ishvara Prakate Param. He's the Supreme Lord of the whole material energy. So this phrase here, she says, yet you are invisible to all. So what does she mean by that? Think of somebody, some concept of an invisible man, somebody you can't see. What she means is that people cannot see, understand how this person, Krishna, is all-pervading Supreme Personality of Godhead. There's something preventing them from seeing that. But actually, Krishna exists in every atom, in his super soul expansion. He's in everyone's heart. And he's all the Vishnu expansions. He's all these things, and yet he is Krishna as he appears before her in his pastimes. So it's not a question of which is he. Is he all-pervading or is he localized? He is both. But the world in general doesn't know him, as Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Naham Pakasha Sarvasya Yogamaya Samavrita. I put a curtain between myself and the persons of this world, so they don't understand me. Now, he will explain, or she will explain more, what this curtain factor is, that people cannot appreciate what is Krishna. So as we hear these verses, we'll get an education in the theology of Krishna consciousness. There'll be no impersonalism in it. We'll understand Krishna is a person as good as any other person. He has friends and relatives and activities and so on. He has a form. But we'll learn that he's the unique Supreme Personality of Godhead. Of course, today you haven't had the advantage of having just read this. By tomorrow, you will have read all the verses and purports that we're going to cover tomorrow. But are there any questions about this opening verse or anything said so far? Okay. So together now we can chant the second one. Maya janavikachchanam agyadhoksajamavyayam nalakshase mudhadrisha Nato natya daro yata. So that here now the curtain is described, and there's some important words here. Krishna's nature is described in the word adhoksaja. Prabhupada describes this, it's very technical Sanskrit, but he helps us to understand it in our language, that as we have in English the alphabet from A to Z, and it comprehends all the alphabets, so in Sanskrit there's a beginning alphabet and a last one, or letter, and that's expressed by words in this word adhoksaja. But adhoksaja means the person who is beyond those things. Everything that you can see in this world, he contains all that, but he's beyond that, he's unreachable. Prabhupada also has sometimes explained adhoksaja to mean that Krishna actively cuts down your attempts to try to understand him by material methods. So she addresses him, being beyond the range of limited sense perception, you are the eternally irreproachable factor, covered by the curtain of deluding energy. You are invisible to the foolish observer, exactly as an actor dressed as a player is not recognized. This is similar to so many Srimad Bhagavatam prayers where the devotee who has so fortunate and qualified to get the darshan of the Lord is glorifying him with some Vedic knowledge and realization in the heart, praising him as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. For our education, one thinks of like prayers of Lord Brahma, in which he very much expresses this apparent duality, that Krishna is a young boy of the Vrindavan forest, and yet I have just seen your pastimes, I understand that everything is coming from you. This is what we have to always understand about Krishna. He's a beloved friend, he's a beloved worshipable object in so many ways, and yet everything comes from him, he's the cause of all causes. So people who, hearing a little bit about Krishna, think, oh, he's just some ordinary person or some myth or something, they're not allowed to approach him, and they're called in this verse mudha. That's a well-known word. Avajananti mam mudha manusim tanamasritam parambhavma jananto mama bhuta maheshwaram. Same application here. The foolish people, they cannot understand you, and you do not allow them to understand you. In his purport to this verse, Prabhupada tells us how Krishna is a historical person, but the activities he did leave no mistake that he's supreme mystic. He gives examples how when he was just 3 months old, he killed Putana in Vrindavan, how he lifted the Govardhan hill. So these activities of Krishna appearing like a human, they're bewildering. Later this, there's a whole section on the how Krishna's pastimes are bewildering, and that theme is brought up here also in the beginning. The mudhas are further described by Prabhupada. He calls them asuras, and they depend very much on experimental knowledge or material knowledge to know everything, and that's why you can never know adhoksaja by such a method. Then, as we call this talk, approaching Krishna, Prabhupada in his purports tells us how we can approach this irreproachable person, and he gives very practical instructions. A number of times he recommends deity worship, and that comes up in this talk, in this verse, because deity worship, he says, for the less intelligent, there are such things as temples, mosques, or churches, so that they may begin to recognize the authority of the Lord and hear about him from authorities in such holy places. So Prabhupada is aware that some people think themselves above temples and churches, think that we're unintelligent people, and they have some other way to understand the Absolute, a meditation or something. And he says, you should not... He admits that this is for beginners, but don't decry this method of approaching God, who's so unapproachable by any other method. So it's good to go and bow down, recognize the greatness of God in these holy places, and hear about Him. We should not be puffed up. Then you can hope to know Krishna, who's otherwise unknowable. Any questions? Yeah.
At the end, Prabhupada said,
that's true. This will be brought up in another purport more about the temple and whether it's for intelligent people or who should go to the temple. I'll save what he says for later on that. But sometimes Prabhupada says that deity worship is for devotees on the lowest platform. But then he says that, but actually that means that there's not much else they can do. They can just be told that there is God and you should bow down to God. And they do it if they have some kind of submission. But they don't really understand that that is God. So the advanced devotee, it's not that he thinks, oh, that's a statue in the temple for the neophytes, I don't go there. But he actually sees Krishna, like we read so many pastimes of devotees with the deities talking to them and so on. So there are different kinds of understanding of the deity, and there are different kinds of service activities. But so as for this sentence, for less intelligent people, they should bow down, and that's as good as advanced devotees meditating upon him by active service. I'm just saying that that's not the only activity of the advanced devotees, that they do service. They also would worship the deity. And perhaps the deity worshippers, they wouldn't do service. It hasn't occurred to them yet that they should do service. Their only service is to get the darshan. So that's as good for them. That's the best thing for them. And then later they'll be able to meditate upon Krishna through actually serving him. You think of like Shantaras and Dasyaras. They're like, not even the Shantaras, but it's that kind of mood. Thinking of really like masses of people who don't have much concept of religion, but somehow or other they go to temples and they go to churches, and that's good for them. Just as good as any benefit that others are getting. And that's like a core of sincerity and submissiveness that should always be there. In this next verse we're covering, Prabhupada talks about women having a particular ability to enter this mood and how this is appreciated by Krishna. Yes?
Reminded of the description of the seven kinds of deities
Yeah. Otherwise we become Maya bodies. No form. God has no form. And those who say that, they think that they're very sophisticated, and they make that propaganda. Like the Shankarites all over the world have made that propaganda that low-class Hindus go to temples, but this is a sophisticated understanding of our religion, that there's formless Brahman. So we're countering that idea. Okay, let's go on. Tata paramahamsanam muninam amalatmanam bhakti yoga vidhanartam katam pashe mahistriya. You yourself descend to propagate the transcendental science of devotional service unto the hearts of the advanced transcendentalists and mental speculators who are purified by being able to discriminate between matter and spirit. How then can we women know you perfectly? So, again, Krishna is very hard to approach. He's invisible. The mudhas don't know him. Then who does know him? Muninam, paramahamsanam, amalatmanam. These are Sanskrit words for very highly qualified persons. Paramahamsa, you know, advanced transcendentalists, Muninam, great philosophers, Amalatmanam, who can discern between matter and spirit. And their qualification by different methods is such that Krishna is moved to reveal himself to them. Ultimately, Krishna, Nayam Atma Pravachanena Labhya, Krishna is known only to the person that Krishna wants to reveal himself. But those who are qualified, he's pleased to reveal himself to them. So that Queen Kunti is thinking of herself as a woman. And so, in comparison to those persons, what about we, Striya, we women, meaning myself, how can I possibly hope to know you? There's throughout these prayers, there's a dynamic tension in her case between seeing Krishna as her nephew, knowing that he's God, and yet feeling that she doesn't really understand what is God, because God is unlimited, but she knows something. And even in her personal relationship, she's aware that she falls short in her personal relationship, and that there is more sweetness in relationships with Krishna than what she has, and there is greater philosophical understanding of Krishna than what she has. But by expressing herself, she reveals all these aspects of Krishna consciousness, which we want to know, which we want to understand. But if she's so humble and yet so advanced, then what about ourselves? So, taking women here as meaning a socially inferior or lowly person, the point can be made, and Prabhupada makes it, that no people are barred from approaching Krishna, who is so hard to approach, because of such material considerations. And he goes on to mention how people criticize the ISKCON members, whether men or women, as being unqualified by especially Westerners, or those who may be Indians and not born as Brahmins. You cannot approach God in this lifetime, and so many things they may criticize. You cannot be a Brahmin. But we don't care for this criticism, and this is not anywhere stated in Scripture as the qualification to have a high birth or parentage. Rather, later we'll read those things are disqualifications. So, this humility of Queen Kunti, Prabhupada goes on to equate it to another similar quality, tolerance. When you're humble, you also tolerate. You may be mistreated, or there may be difficulties in life, and you tolerate them. The difficulties come from within this world, or sometimes they even come from Krishna, or Krishna's agent. Prabhupada says here that when we come to Krishna consciousness, Krishna tests us in different ways. He says, especially in the beginning, it's Maya testing to see whether you have come to disturb Krishna in the name of being a devotee, or whether you actually want to serve him. So when these different tests come, we should be like Queen Kunti. And Queen Kunti had so many trials, unbelievable trials. She mentions them. We'll read here tomorrow about them. But she was always humble, always trusting Krishna, and tolerant. So here I'd like to play the first tape excerpt, just because Prabhupada speaks so feelingly, and it's just a very brief one. And it's at the end of his lecture, when he enters the mood and almost the vocal, the word expression of Queen Kunti about feeling so low and unqualified to understand our beloved Supreme Lord. Okay?
So one who knows that Krishna is the cause of all causes, he not only theoretically but practically convinced he is Paramahansa. So Kunti Devi, by humble submission, that you are meant for the Paramahansa, for the Amalatmanam, for the Muninam, and who are engaged in Bhaktijana, and what we are simply women. We are in the lower grade. How he can understand? This is humble. Although she understands everything, but still she is taking the position of an ordinary woman. That how can I understand? Thank you very much.
Any questions? Prabhupada just doesn't say the words, he just puts so much into them. You think of an actor, how Prabhupada's not acting in any part, but how an actor takes some lines and they come alive and you cry when he's sad or you're afraid if he's afraid. Prabhupada enters the heart of Queen Kunti and we can feel it. Yes?
Do you have anything else to say about this special advantage that a person in a woman's body
has? Oh. Yeah. Let's see. At the end of the Bhagavatam purport, he says, women in general are unable to speculate like philosophers, but they are blessed by the Lord because they believe at once in the superiority and almightiness of the Lord, and thus they offer obeisances without reservation. Lord knows the sincerity of purpose. For this reason only, women generally assemble in great number in any sort of religious function. In every country and in every sect of religion, it appears that the women are more interested than the men. The simplicity of acceptance of the Lord's authority is more effective than showy, insincere religious fervor. So, they're quick to accept the almightiness of God. That can also, they also may be quick to be misled by some other authority. But when it's used properly, they have they're more apt to accept this. This is what he's saying. That's the specialty of the women. And therefore, in any religious place, you always see more women are there. And so then you can think of the men, what they're doing or what they're thinking, why they don't go. Some kind of skeptical, hard thinking or inability to go there and be so humble to go to church. I remember my family, it was like that. My father was always saying, oh, those priests are just going to collect, take your money. And my mother would go to church. Next. Krishnaya Vasudevaya Devaki Nandanaya Cha Nanda Gopa Kumaraya Govindaya Namo Namaha. Let me therefore offer my respectful obeisances unto the Lord, who has become the son of Vasudeva, the pleasure of Devaki, the boy of Nanda, and the other cowherd men of Vrindavan, and the enlivener of the cows and senses. So here Queen Kunti adores Krishna's Vrindavan pastimes. She's not a devotee of Vrindavan, she's a devotee of Hastinapur. But she, as Prabhupada says, specifically adores the descent of Lord Krishna above all other incarnations. Why? Because he's more approachable. And this is the whole topic of this class or this group of verses, starting out with saying he's at Hoksaja, so far away. The Mudhas can't know him. Only the Muninam know him. But when he comes as Krishna, the residents of Vrindavan find, oh, they know him very intimately. They love him. So she's appreciating Krishna in this aspect, original Krishna. So actually, all devotees of Krishna, they may not be in the Vrindavan pastimes, but they worship them, like Lord Brahma also in his prayers. He says the residents of Vrindavan are the most glorious. I hope that in some future birth I may be born there. And they learn so much from the residents of Vrindavan, even though they have a different rasa. So Krishna is approachable. And Prabhupada gives more practical advice about approaching Krishna. He says that, in general, he talks about the bhakti yoga process, the ninefold process. So he says that this begins, sevan mukhi jiva do svayameva spratyatha. You can't know Krishna by the senses, but when you start to engage the senses, starting with the tongue, chanting and taking prasadam, you can start to know Krishna. And again, he follows up about the deity worship. Excuse me. He says, The Krishna consciousness movement is so sublime, it put one in direct contact with Govinda. The worship of the deity of Krishna in the temple is direct contact with Govinda. I am very pleased, therefore, when my disciples nicely dress the deity, offer the deity nice foodstuff, and keep the temple very clean. Sri Mandira Marjanado. But when we go into the temple, we should not be like that mass of people less intelligent who only go, make a prayer, and then leave, not knowing exactly what it all is. But we should sit down like we're doing in this setting and hear about Krishna from Queen Kunti and from Srila Prabhupada. This is hearing. Prabhupada says that we should try to hear and chant about Krishna always, 24 hours a day, and in this way the dirty things will be cleansed from our heart. We should always read Srimad Bhagavatam and carry out the order of one's spiritual master. And then for approaching Krishna, he says that we should engage in distributing Krishna consciousness. This will please Krishna very much. To awaken the dormant Krishna consciousness of others is the greatest welfare activity in the world. We can actually see that devotees who were not Krishna conscious 4 or 5 years ago have been awakened and are now Krishna conscious. Similarly, others can be awakened also. There is no difficulty. The process is the same. So those are some of the points in the verse addressing Krishna as Vrindavan. Krishna, she uses the words Nandagopa and Govindaya, and also that he's the son of Vasudeva and Devaki. Very nice verse made up of so many names of Krishna. Krishnaya Vasudevaya Devaki Nandanaya Cha Nandagopa Kumaraya Govindan Govindaya Namo Nama. After saying, "We are women, what can we understand?" she then speaks such a beautiful verse, full of such knowledge of everything of Krishna. Any questions on that verse? Yes.
Those devotees who have that relationship with friends and relatives and death, do they enter, like, she doesn't see the word Radharani or the Gopi, do they enter ever that kind of relationship mood, or they just stay in the...
Those who are in the Sakya Ras as friends?
Friends or relatives like they are.
Relatives like parents or aunts?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, everyone has their eternal seed or their eternal relationship. So the relationships are absolute, and Krishna reciprocates with devotees according to those different relationships. So everything is perfect in the absolute and in the liberated stage. If Krishna only wanted gopis, then there would be no mother and father. But how could he eat if he didn't have a mother and father? Where would he live? And if he didn't have friends, how would he take care of the cows? He wants to do all these things. And there are devotees who want to do them. So we're at the point where we're just trying to appreciate Krishna out of ignorance that we're in. And so the more we can see how Krishna loves everyone. Prabhupada, many times he describes Vrindavan like that. He'll say, quite in his own words, he'll say that Vrindavan means that everyone loves Krishna. And he comes home from the fields, and the boys tell, Krishna killed a demon today, and the mothers say, that's wonderful. And then he says, so in Vrindavan, everyone loves Krishna. And then he enumerates who they are. The gopis, the cowherd boys, the water, the river, the cows, everyone. he gives us this picture of all the Vrajabhasis, like under the Govardhan Hill. Everyone. They're all looking at Krishna in different ways. So we should become inspired by that. And as we appreciate even the blade of grass, then eventually we'll know what we are, how we love Krishna. Okay, this is the last one now of this group. And this is particularly nice sounds and repetition in this verse. Nama Pankajanabhaya, Nama Pankajamaline, Nama Pankajanetraya, Namaste Pankajam Grihaye. My respectful obeisances are unto you, O Lord, whose abdomen is marked with a depression like a lotus flower, who are always decorated with garlands of lotus flowers, whose glance is as cool as the lotus, and whose feet are engraved with lotuses. So Krishna is so beautiful, he's compared to the most beautiful thing in this world, the lotuses. And Prabhupada, in describing this verse, goes once again to saying how we can see this vision of the lotus-like Lord. This is certainly not impersonalism, that he's a beautiful form and each part of his body is so beautiful. And so to give expression to how beautiful it is compared to the most beautiful thing. His abdomen, his feet, his chest decorated with the flowers. Then he gets to the deity worship again. As Prabhupada's words, he says, the Pankajanava Lord accepts the form of Archavigraha. Pankajanava, the lotus-like Lord, comes as Archavigraha. From his purport, some very nice passages. All such forms of the Lord are always decorated with garlands of lotus flowers, and there should be a soothing atmosphere in the temple of worship to attract the burning attention of the non-devotees always engaged in material wranglings. You see how you can get such peace of mind if you come off the street and go into a Krishna temple and see the incense and flowers, come to the Artik, Sundar Artik, or after work or whatever, and all the, what is the word, soothing, and the burning, your brain is burning when you see all this nice worship and flowers of Krishna. Therefore the Lord is merciful even to the women, Shudras and Dvija Bandhus, provided they agree to visit the temple and worship the different forms made for them. Such temple visitors are not idolaters, as alleged by some men with a poor fund of knowledge. All the great acharyas established such temples of worship in all places just to favor the less intelligent. And one should not pose himself as transcending the stage of temple worship while one is actually in the category of the Sudras and the women or less. But when we hear these descriptions that less intelligent people worship the deity, we think, well, that's not me. I don't want to be less intelligent. I'll take the other kind. I'll meditate on the formless. And of course, that's not it more advanced in any case. But even granted that temple worship is for beginners, Prabhupada says, don't pose yourself as being above this beginning stage when you're actually in this category. That's a very good instruction for us. This beginning stage or easy practice is suitable for us because we are in this lower stage. We're not Muni Nam Paramahamsa. We're not Queen Kunti. But we should be humble like her. And so you meditate on the deity starting from his feet, and he describes how that is. And again, that deity worship, however, should be accompanied by also hearing from persons in the temple, the devotees who are giving classes. So now I have another strong excerpt by Prabhupada about the power and purity of approaching Krishna by shravanam. Play that.
In the Srimad Bhagavatam, everything is there. There is literature, there is poetry, there is philosophy, there is religion, there is love of Godhead, there is astronomy. Everything is there. Srimad Bhagavatam, Amalam Puran, Vidya Bhagavatavadi. If one simply reads this Srimad Bhagavatam, his education is the topmost. Vidya Bhagavatavadi. There is something topmost, ultimate. So for education, Vidya, this Srimad Bhagavatam. if one studies Srimad Bhagavatam, he is well versed in every subject matter. So, we want to create a new generation in your country so that in future they will be fluent speakers in Srimad Bhagavatam and preach all over the country, and your country will be saved. This is our program. We have come here not to exploit your country, but to give you something substantial. This is Krishna consciousness, no plan. So, read Srimad Bhagavatam, pronounce the verses very nicely, therefore we are repeating. You hear the records and try to repeat. Simply by chanting the mantra, you will purify. Simply by chanting, even if you do not understand a single word of it, simply if you chant, this vibration has got such power. Sinnatang sakata Krishna punna savana kirtana. If you simply chant and vibrate these verses, these slokas, it is punna savana kirtana. There is no question of understanding. Punna savana kirtana. Punna means pious, and savana means hearing, and kirtana means chant. One is chanting this verse, and one is hearing this verse, he is becoming pious automatically. Pious. To become pious, one has to endeavor so much, do this, do that. But if you simply hear this verses are Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita. Therefore, as a rigid principle in every temple, there should be class for hearing and chanting. Without hearing and chanting, to become leader, it is impossible. Okay, you can become leader in the material world, but not in the spiritual world.
So we can approach the Pankajanabha Lord by seeing him in the temple and by hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. So this prayers of Queen Kunti is Srimad Bhagavatam. And Prabhupada also recommended that we chant, so every day we'll be chanting all these shlokas together. And even if we don't understand them, these vibrations will purify us. Punya Shravana Kirtana. Maybe even when we're not in the class, devotees will be going around singing these songs. All right. So, any question about the aggregate of these first five verses or anything? Yes. Yeah. It's easy. Easy for the simple, hard for the crooked. So you can make it hard, but Krishna has made it easy. If you approach by some other means, then the curtain is there and you cannot reach Adhoksija. But if you're simple like a woman, in this sense of the woman accepting the authority of God, then it can be very simple. So simple, you just hear, you don't even have to understand. Just hear this, the vibrations. See the beautiful Lord, think he looks very nice, and try to understand the philosophy. But we make it difficult. Vede sudurlabham adurlabham atmabhakto. Krishna is difficult to approach by study of the Vedas, but if you become a devotee, he's adurlabha, not difficult. I think we can, like you're asking that question, we can think ourselves that sometimes Krishna consciousness seems to us very easy and natural as anything, thanks to Prabhupada, what he's given us. And then sometimes it becomes very difficult for us, and that's mostly because of impediments and dirty things that are within us. Not that the process is so hard. Just to chant Hare Krishna is not a hard thing, but it becomes difficult. Yes. reference or a similar point, yeah. What verse is that? Third one. Yeah, Bhakti Yoga word is used there. You yourself descend to propagate transcendental cert. Yeah? There's like a verse by Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya that you have come to distribute Bhakti Yoga. And that also is easy. Krishna becomes very approachable by Lord Chaitanya's Sankirtan. So those who fully understand Krishna as much as possible, they are in this category of paramahamsas, highly exalted persons. But who is that paramahamsa or the true muninam, etc.? That gets explored more in future verses also, that when Krishna talks about, she talks about how Krishna is a kinchana gochara, and who he actually favors, those who are materially exhausted. So Krishna comes, especially as Lord Chaitanya, he comes to save the most fallen and to save everyone. But those who actually understand and receive Krishna, they're not to be considered fallen, they are the most advanced. I think in the context of this verse and discussion, there's like, you could say there's like a false idea of what is the advanced devotee who understands Krishna, as if it's great philosophers and yogis and not like lower class like women or shudras. But this mistaken idea is being clarified, that anyone who accepts Krishna by the bhakti yoga process is actually the advanced person. So it's not a contradiction. Like manusinam sahasreshu kaschidyatati siddhaye, that out of many, many persons, only a few will know Krishna. Or brahmande bharati kona bhagyavan jeev, only some rare persons, they receive the mercy of Krishna and Guru. So those who do receive bhakti yoga are advanced persons. They're more advanced than karmis and jnanis and yogis. They may appear as simple people, or they may appear also as philosophers, but wherever they actually practice bhakti under the guidance of the pure devotee, they're the paramahamsas. I was reading in one section, Prabhupada was talking about paramahamsa, and he gave three definitions. One is that he can discriminate between matter and spirit. So anyone in the world who can do that amidst this bewildering array of material energy can pull out the spiritual essence of oneself and relationship. That's a paramahamsa. And right now I can't remember the other two definitions. But they weren't like that he must be expert in Sanskrit or Vedanta Sutra or something like that. So yes, Krishna is for the advanced devotees, but who is the advanced persons of human society? And she's speaking personally, like you could say, generally or traditionally, you think of who is actually advanced in the Vedic society in understanding God. It's the brahmanas, it is the scholars, it is the yogis and tyagis, and it's not the materialistic women and shudras. So in that sense, in society, the very cultured and educated people in that society, they knew God and they could teach others. But if those so-called scholars and advanced persons are Mayavadis or don't surrender to Krishna, then what good is their religious showy fervor or pretense of Vedanta knowledge? Better some simple acceptance by the people who go to the temple. and bow down to Krishna. Okay, we're almost done. Yes, mind, honey.
Yeah.
It means that this is possible for us, and the other things are not possible. So relatively easy. But good things don't come easy. So we have to work for it. But it's easy to chant Hare Krishna and to develop pure devotion that way, as he's saying. But to do it by any other method is just out of the question. All right.